Folk Tales of Napoleon, Part 3. The Napoleon of the People by Honoré de Balzac, continued. After he had gone, things went from bad to worse. The generals lost their heads, and the marshals quarreled with one another and did all sorts of foolish things, as was natural. Napoleon, who was good to everybody, had fed them on gold until they'd become as fat as pigs, and they didn't want to do any more marching. This led to trouble, because many of them remained idle in forts behind the army that was driving us back to France, and didn't even try to relieve us by attacking the enemy in the rear. The emperor finally returned, bringing with him a lot of splendid recruits whom he had drilled into regular war dogs, ready to set their teeth into anything. He also brought a bourgeois guard of honor, a fine troop, which melted away in battle like butter on a hot gridiron. In spite of the bold front that we put on, everything went against us, although the army performed feats of wonderful courage. Then came regular battles of mountains, nations against nations, at Dresden, Lutzen, and Bautzen. Don't you ever forget that time, because it was then that Frenchmen showed how wonderfully heroic they could be. A good grenadier in those days seldom lasted more than 6 months. We always won, of course, but there in our rear were the English, stirring up the nations to take sides against us. But we fought our way through this pack of nations at last. Wherever Napoleon showed himself, we rushed, and whenever, on land or sea, he said, "I wish to pass," we passed. We finally got back to France, and many a poor foot soldier was braced up by the air of his native country, notwithstanding the hard times we had. As for myself in particular, I may say that it renewed my life. It then became a question of defending the fatherland, our fair France, against all Europe. They didn't like our laying down the law to the Russians, and our driving them back across their borders, so they couldn't devour us, as is the custom of the North. Those northern peoples are very greedy for the South, or at least that's what I've heard many generals say. Then Napoleon saw arrayed against him his own father-in-law, his friends whom he had made kings, and all the scoundrels whom he had put on thrones. Finally, in pursuance of orders from high quarters, even Frenchmen and allies in our own ranks turned against us, as at the Battle of Leipzig. Common soldiers wouldn't have been mean enough to do that. Men who called themselves princes broke their word 3 times a day. Well, then came the invasion. Wherever Napoleon showed his lion face, the enemy retreated, and he worked more miracles in defending France than he had shown in conquering Italy, the East, Spain, Europe, and Russia. He wanted to bury all the invaders in France, and thus teach them to respect the country. So he let them come close to Paris, in order to swallow them all at a gulp, and rise to the height of his genius, in a battle greater than all the others, a regular mother of battles. But those cowardly Parisians were so afraid for their wretched skins and their miserable shops, that they opened the gates of the city. Then the good times ended, and the Ragusades began. They fooled the Empress, and hung white flags out of the palace windows. Finally, the very generals whom Napoleon had taken for his best friends deserted him and went over to the Bourbons, of whom nobody had ever before heard. Then he bade us goodbye at Fontainebleau. "Soldiers!" I can hear him, even now. We were all crying like regular babies, and the eagles and flags were lowered as if for a funeral. And it was a funeral, the funeral of the Empire. His old soldiers, once so hale and spruce, were little more than skeletons. Standing on the portico of his palace, he said to us, "Comrades, we have been beaten through treachery, but we shall all see one another again in heaven, the country of the brave. Protect my child, whom I entrust to you. Long live Napoleon II. like Jesus Christ before his last agony. He believed himself deserted by God and his star, and in order that no one should see him conquered, it was his intention to die. But although he took poison enough to kill a whole regiment, it never hurt him at all. Another proof, you see, that he was more than man. He found himself immortal. As he felt sure of his business after that, and knew that he was to be emperor always, he went to a certain island for a while to study the natures of those people in Paris, who did not fail, of course, to do stupid things without end. While he was standing guard down there, the Chinese and those animals on the coast of Africa, Moors and others, who were not at all easy to get along with, were so sure that he was something more than man that they respected his tent and said that to touch it would be to offend God. So he reigned over the whole world, although those other fellows had sent him out of France. Well then, after a while he embarked again in that very same nutshell of a boat that he had left Egypt in, passed right under the bows of the English vessels, and set foot once more in France. France acknowledged him. The sacred cuckoo flew from spire to spire, and all the people cried, "Long live the Emperor!" In this vicinity, the enthusiasm for the wonder of the ages was most hearty. Dauphiny behaved well, and it pleased me particularly to know that our own people here wept for joy when they saw again his gray coat. On the 1st of March, Napoleon landed with 200 men to conquer the kingdom of France and Navarre, and on the 20th of the same month, that kingdom became the French Empire. On that day, the man was in Paris. He had made a clean sweep, had reconquered his dear France, and had brought all his old soldiers together again by just saying three words, "Here I am." 'Twas the greatest miracle God had ever worked. Did ever a man before him take an empire by merely showing his hat? They thought that France was crushed, did they? Not a bit of it. At sight of the eagle, a national army sprang up, and we all marched to Waterloo. There the guard perished, as if stricken down at a single blow. Napoleon, in despair, threw himself three times at the head of his troops on the enemy's cannon, without being able to find death. The battle was lost. That evening, the emperor called his old soldiers together, and on the field wet with our blood, burned his eagles and his flags. The poor eagles, who had always been victorious, who had cried forward in all our battles, and who had flown over all Europe, were saved from the disgrace of falling into the hands of their enemies. All the treasure of England couldn't buy the tail of one of them. They were no more. The rest of the story is well known to everybody. The red man went over to the Bourbons like the scoundrel that he is. The France was crushed, and the old soldiers, who were no longer of any account, were deprived of their dues and sent back to their homes, in order that their places might be given to a lot of nobles who couldn't even march. It was pitiful to see them try. Then Napoleon was seized through treachery, and the English nailed him to a rock, 10,000 feet above the earth, on a desert island in the great ocean. There he must stay until the red man, for the good of France, gives him back his power. It is said by some that he is dead. Oh, yes, dead. That shows how little they know him. They only tell that lie to cheat the people and keep peace in their shanty of a government. The truth of the matter is that his friends have left him there in the desert to fulfill a prophecy that was made about him. For I have forgotten to tell you that the name Napoleon really means Lion of the Desert. This that I have told you is gospel truth, and all the other things that you hear about the emperor are foolish stories with no human likeness. Because, you see, God never gave to any other man born of woman the power to write his name in red across the whole world, and the world will remember him forever. Long live Napoleon, the father of the soldiers and the people. The end.